The following is a presentation of the Matt Talk Podcast Network.
Welcome to On the Mat. I am Kyle Klingman of Track Wrestling, along with a man who wants a large medium charge. Andy Hamilton, also of Track Wrestling.
What'd you just say?
Large medium charge.
Large medium charge. What in the world does that mean, Kyle?
You don't remember the old Pizza Hut ads where you could write down on a piece of paper, I'll take a large medium charge,
no.
And then they would charge you for a medium pizza?
Really?
And it was way back when. And I thought it'd be a great intro for you.
Not your best.
So, I like it.
Okay.
That's all that matters to me, yes. Really. I mean, I loved that ad. You can go back and watch it on YouTube. I actually found it. It's really semi-ridiculous given our technology that we have to think about someone actually writing that on a piece of paper and then getting a large for medium charge. But it worked at the time, I guess.
Do people even write on paper anymore?
I do.
Yeah,
I have it right here. I love writing stuff down on paper. Absolutely. I don't think you ever do. Do you even have a pen?
Yeah.
Do you ever use it?
Yeah.
What would you use a pen for?
I write down notes in church.
Okay. So that's the only way.
Church. That's the only time I take notes anymore.
Time.
It's funny because I've got a box of notebooks somewhere in this house, maybe on the garage, of just notebook after notebook filled with stuff from when I was in Iowa City and in Des Moines. And I got into this business. All I carried with me was a notepad, a pen, and a recorder. And now my recorder is my phone. I don't carry a notepad. Sometimes I don't even have a pen in my backpack, I'm ashamed to say.
I wonder if they even teach cursive anymore. I don't even know if that would be a thing. I don't even know if kids today, and that's the theme, is that we're going into the Cadet World Championships. And so you're listening to this show because you're going to get some great insight from all our developmental coaches, Gary Mayab for Greco-Roman, Jessica Medina for the women's freestyle. And then we close out with Kevin Jackson with the men's freestyle team. So we're going to talk about the Cadet World Championships. But I just wonder if they even use pen and paper at all. I'm guessing not, because I've asked before with high school kids. I said, do you guys ever pass notes? And they said no. They said it's all text, or Snapchat or something else.
Think about like the things that have just gone extinct or on the verge of extinction, like in the last 20 years, like the phone booth, phone books. I mean, we still get a phone book delivered here, but I don't know anybody that. When's the last time you used a phone book, Kyle?
I didn't. I can remember someone stopped by the Gable Museum when I worked there. They were delivering it, and I just said, we don't want one. And I think she was a little bit hurt. Like, hey, she went back to whoever was dropping her off and said, hey, they don't want one. Because why would you use one? You have everything at your disposal. You just use Google. There's no reason to use a phone book. So you're right. A lot of things have gone extinct. The handwritten letter, it's now text, so there's a lot of things that have gone extinct.
Remember when, like,
technology,
cordless phones we thought were the coolest thing ever? Because you could go anywhere in your house, you wouldn't be tethered to your phone, like, you wouldn't have to stand next to wherever the phone was bolted on the wall.
Cordless phone, and yeah, and then teen lines, too. I mean, think about that, where there was a private line for your teenager so they could have their own number so that you wouldn't have to bother the home phone. Now it's just ridiculous. Everyone has their own personal cell phone. So a lot has changed here in the last 10 years. And
maybe 20.
Well, 10, too. I mean, look back to, 2019, 2009. Just even the upgrades and phones, I didn't.
Hey, how about 2009? We didn't even have a Cadet World Championships.
Well, there you go. We're going to talk extensively about that. And let's talk extensively about the quote that you posted from Dayton Fix that's gone like gangbusters. Everyone's talking about that. It was on this podcast, On the Mat. A lot of people responded to that about Dayton Fix's comment about his dad, Derek, and how he used a developmental method to build him into the champion he is today. A lot of people liked it and it resonated with a lot of people. So kudos for putting that out there, and great insight from Dayton Fix about his dad and how to do it the right way.
Well, having the opportunity to be with Dayton and Derek over in Finland when Dayton won a junior world title, seeing how proud that his father was of him, and then also seeing him at Final X Lincoln last year when he lost chance to make the senior world team, lost in a best of three series to Thomas Gilman, and seeing how supportive of his son that he was then, you know, just proud of the effort. Realized that probably a lot of wrestling parents can learn from the example that Derek Fix has set for his son, and having the opportunity to talk to Dayton about it. It was really fascinating. It was enlightening where he talked about just how he's been improvement driven rather than results driven. And so he said it was never, you know, his dad never made it about results. It was never about if I won or lost. It was about getting, if I was getting better. And he said, I can remember a time when I was first year wrestling. He wrestled a guy that beat him by 10 points. Next time they wrestled, they only beat him by 5. And his dad was pretty proud of that. And so Dayton said, as a result of that, just being improvement driven, process driven, said he's never been afraid to lose. And because of that, it's allowed him to go out and just wrestle really freely and not be afraid to put it on the line.
I don't think we can overstate how important this topic is. And we've spent quite a bit of time talking about it, but I think it really applies as we think about the Cadet World Championships being on track wrestling and the opportunity to watch this live. But you're going to get a chance to watch 30 athletes compete at the highest level for their age group, but what gets them there? And I think it really is the process. And we've developed a process that puts them in an environment where they're going to not necessarily fail, but they're going to get tested against the very best all the time. And you really are going to take a lot of lumps when you are wrestling higher level senior athletes, junior athletes. You're going to wrestle some individuals at your level, but to never be scared of that and to just put it on the line and have that mentality that it really is the process, and to think about how do you score on a single leg in the best way possible and how do you finish it rather than winning 3-2 when you could have extended that lead and put it out there a little bit more. So I think it's a great topic for where things are going. And with the Cadet World Championships, I think we're seeing the success right now because of that mentality. And it will be fun to see how the results play out with this process-driven approach. And we get a chance to see it full force here at the 2019 Cadet World Championships coming up July 29th through August 4th, Andy.
You fired up about your trip to Bulgaria, Kyle?
Super fired up. I love this, man. This is so fun to see this level and to be in an environment. I've never been to an age level world championship, and to see what this looks like and to feel it, I think it's really important to watch what the trends are and watch what these guys execute in a world level environment at this age level. I'm super excited about it. And you've been to one.
Are you planning to shave your beard to look a little younger, fit in with the younger crowd?
I actually think I look younger with the beard.
Do you?
I do.
Okay.
I think I'm going to keep that for sure. I just want to keep this growing as long as possible. I've been blessed with being able to grow a quality beard, and I want to keep that trend going as long as possible. I'm not going to grow it way out.
You're not going to rival Mike Zadek?
I could rival Mike Zadek if I wanted to.
You don't want to?
I don't want to.
Why not?
I just don't want it that long, but I could be better than Mike Zadek with my beard.
That's a lot of talk.
It is, but I can guarantee you this.
That's beard, a lot of talk without backing it up.
Well, I see what it looks like right now, and this thing could be epic on a scale that would put Mike Zadek to shame. It really could be. I'm not going to do it, but it could go that direction if I want.
All hat, no cattle.
Well,
Kyle,
listen, I don't know that you could even grow a beard.
I can't.
Well, exactly.
I'm not the one claiming I can grow my exotic beard,
though. I am claiming that. I'm not going to do it, but I could get there. I've let it go pretty far. About 10 years ago, I let it go, and it got to a pretty good level where it was pretty impressive. So I'm proud of that.
Congratulations.
Thank you. Andrew, as we look toward the Junior World Championships in Estonia, which you will be attending, what parts are you looking forward to the most? What intrigues you? Let's talk about the Junior World Championships a little bit.
Well, I think I'm looking forward to a couple things in particular. Number one, just seeing who emerges. There will be some stars that come out of this tournament that we didn't know about already. I mean, look at Makai Lewis, what he did a year ago. Phenomenal run to a Junior World title. Springboard for him to an NCAA title and takes down two-time NCAA champ Vincenzo Joseph. Just a tremendous freshman season at Virginia Tech. So will somebody like that emerge this year? Really eager to find that out. And then the other thing is just, that same point on a global level and seeing which stars emerge and who becomes a factor that, we might not know about quite yet, but somebody that's on our radar for 2020, because we've seen this tournament has been a launching pad to success internationally. And shoot, I think you get an argument from a lot of people that this is a tournament that maybe one of the five, six, seven toughest tournaments in the world to win.
I'd say so. I don't think there's any question about it. When you translate that into some of the people that have won Junior World Championships, or maybe even the ones that have not, you look at a guy like John Smith, never won a Junior World, but went on to six World and Olympic Championships. You have Jordan Burroughs that never won a Junior World medal, I don't think. So you have that level and how hard it is to win that tournament. I always go back to Randy Lewis, who knows his career inside and out better than anyone probably in the history of U.S. wrestling, but he's always disappointed when his Junior World Championship doesn't get brought up because he's so proud of that accomplishment and how hard it is to win that tournament. So it just shows the level. It's a little bit different than saying, hey, is it tougher than winning an NCAA championship versus a Junior World Championship? They're both equally tough. Of course, the style difference plays a big part in that, but when you bagged a Junior World Championship, it's a big deal.
Yeah, and I laugh because 2 years ago up in Finland, Ryan Deacon had gone that year, the previous fall, he had gone, I think, maybe 0-2 or 1-2 or 2-2 at the Eastern Michigan Open. He failed the place at the Eastern Michigan Open. Then he goes and makes Junior World Finals. Oh, yeah. And Matt Storniello was joking with him after he made the finals. He says, man, this tournament's a lot easier than the Eastern Michigan Open.
Yeah, well, it's fun to see who comes out of it. And I think that the Junior World Championships are certainly one of those that you want to watch. And then even beyond that, the U23s, it's a new tournament concept. Within, 2 years ago, they started the U23s, which used to be the University World, but now they have the U23s. That's also a tournament that you've seen those things happen where I think there's even been a couple times where someone won a world championship, the senior world championship, and then went to the U23s and didn't win the U23s. These age level competitions are as high as they've ever been. And I think that's even more reason that you want to tune in, because these are the stars of the future, but they're also the stars of current day, and you get to see them at a variety of different tournaments and in a variety of different levels. Before we get to our first guest, we want to get to our mailbag. Our one and only question comes from Dennis Lemire of Stillwater, Minnesota. What are your thoughts on one club having 9 current or past wrestlers make a world championship team this year? It feels like a pretty huge number. Thank you, longtime listener, first-time emailer. Love the show. Thoughts on that, Andrew?
Well, I think Dennis is referring to Pinnacle. And I can't name off 9 on the spot, but I can name off several of them, including Craig Kirkfliet, guy that's been in the Cadet World Finals the last 2 years, won a gold in Athens in 2017, silver last year over in Croatia. He's a Pinnacle product. Incredible what those guys have done. Jared Lawrence and Brandon Paulson and company with that club up there. And And we've seen it trickle down to what's happening with Team Minnesota at the state level. Cadet duels, junior duels, I guess 16 U duels this year. Schoolboy duels. Minnesota has performed exceptionally well. We've seen top level performances from Team Minnesota in Fargo. And then certainly the Pinnacle products have gone on and performed really, really well on the international stage. I mentioned Kirk Fliett, but Emily Shilson was a cadet world champ a year ago. Mitch McKee was in the junior world finals 2 years ago. They've cranked out people that have won at the highest level, and it's been really impressive.
I think this question just leads to a larger topic, which is just the proliferation of clubs in the United States and how important they are to the developmental process. You look at Pinnacle, which we did a video tour of that club, which will be on track shortly. But when you do watch that, you're just going to see world-class facilities for a club, and they build their own facilities so that they can develop them in their own way. And these aren't just wrestling mats. These are weight rooms. There's waiting rooms for the parents. There's stands for the parents. Every detail has been thought out. They even have a little shop so that if you want Pinnacle apparel, you can purchase that. And it goes beyond that. It goes to someone that you know well. Jody Stripmatter has Young Guns, and someone that we need to mention, Nick Spatola, who is out of Ohio. Just want to make sure we mention that he was part of making a dream come true for a terminally ill man named Jack Goins, who his dying wish was to visit the Gable Museum and got to meet Dan Gable. And he was part of that, but what an incredible experience it was for him to be able to have that opportunity, and broke down and cried, and being able to meet Gable was his real end game that he wanted before he passes away. And just stuff that we get these opportunities all the time. I just do want to mention that it really did move a lot of people, his story and his way that he articulated that on how important it was for him. And we get a chance to go to world championships and be around great athletes all the time. But for him, it was such a big moment for his life. So kudos to Nick Spatola for doing that, and to Jack Goins for being part of this incredible experience for a lot of people. He inspired a lot of people from that. But as we think beyond that and what these clubs do, it's just an outlet that has gone to unprecedented levels. And we talk about Gable. There wasn't really a club system other than the high school, and that's how you developed. And now it seems like if you're going to get to the highest level, I don't know how you do it without a club.
Yeah.
I don't know. I don't think you do it without a club. How do you just maintain just a couple freestyle tournaments in the off season, and then you just get into your high school practice? It just doesn't work that way anymore. It's just a different level. And if you're going to be ready, and so we're talking about cadets, U23s and juniors, you better be doing a lot before that in order to get yourself prepared.
Yeah, clubs, RTCs have really changed the game for the United States.
And I think back to some really successful wrestlers that I was around growing up in high school. It was, you went and worked in the summers, and maybe you did a couple local freestyle tournaments. And then once the high school season came around, you did the high school season, and they were able to be all D1 All-Americans in college. But that game has certainly changed. And so I appreciate Dennis's question, because when he says, what do you think about 9 world level competitors in one club? It's unprecedented, but the reason it's unprecedented is because there's so many clubs doing those things. And I don't want to say it's an arms race for clubs across the nation, but when you can do that locally and bring in great talent, it's certainly going to develop them in a way that other programs can't do. And so Pinnacle's doing a great job with that. And as we end this and go into Gary Mabb, please, if you like our show, give us a review. We're on a lot of different portals. We want to thank Jason Bryant of Matt Talk Online for having us on his Matt Talk Online podcast network. Of course, you can go to Track Wrestling and find us. But if you like what we do, give us a review. We'd appreciate it. And any comments you have, please send them our way. And we always like mailbag items. So If you have a question, comment, anything that you want to be on this show, send it our way and we will get to it. And we're going to get to Gary Mayab on the Greco-Roman front. Our first guest as we count down toward the 2019 Cadet World Championships live on Track Wrestling is Gary Mayab, manager of Greco-Roman programs. And it fits in well because you know this Cadet World Championship team. What do you want these guys to get out of this incredible experience?
Well, I mean, first, it's that, now we've had U15s this year, and that has become the starting point. But as we started last year out, this was our starting point. You know what I mean? We did not know we were going to get U15s. And so our cadets are starting points. That's for our international rating. So that's where right now U15 is kind of taken on that mantle. But still, I mean, cadets have not lost anything. If nothing more, they've gained, because now we're going to be tracking athletes both nationally and internationally below, one level below them. You know, it's just like as we get, I start junior camp today. And as we start that process, we know that we've got, guys that's been on cadet teams and now they're on junior teams. We have guys that's returning to the junior team. Having that prior work with them is huge. And now we're going to enjoy that same kind of thing, having U15 moving into cadets now. But right now, we are still in this first year process of this. So we do not have team members that was with us a year ago. So everyone is new on this team. And so we had a great camp, best camp that I've been a part of since coming on board. So it was very exciting. It's a great group to work with.
What makes it the best camp? When you say something like that, give us some insight into what made it so great.
Well, we put out some measurable areas that we wanted to get to. We had selected goals. One of our primary goals, obviously, is to make them internationally ready. And there are things that are different about what we do domestically and what happens internationally, obviously. We're very thankful that we moved the time period nationally to a 2-minute period for cadets. The more matches that we get in that area, that was a big problem that we had a year before. You know, our cadets, they were used to going threes and they get out there, they've got a 3-minute pace to start with. They think they're going to get hit. You know, if nothing happens, they're going to get hit somewhere around the minute mark. You know, we're getting, they're making a decision as early as 20, 25 minute, seconds into the match on who they're going to sell to put down first. And so we've seen a lot of video on this. And so there's things like that has really helped us. But to try to make them more internationally ready, I mean, folk style does so much for us in America. We have great folk style wrestling. And it bleeds over to the two international styles very well. But at the same point in time, one thing that does not transfer over very well is a legitimate arm spin. And by legitimate, I mean either a drop or a load spin. And we see this as the number one move used overseas to gain 4 points. And yet we're not top of our game on that in our feet. It's the same kind of situation we have with making ourselves more internationally ready in parterre. You know, we will defend the lock pretty well, but once they get the lock, then we were not moving the lock and defending it as well as we should. So we did a lot of work. We spent more than half of our time in camp, throughout all of camp, in parterre position. So we made a stronger push to parterre, and we've been doing it, but we find that we're still deficient in that area. And so that's an area that we've worked very, very hard in. And I believe these athletes are improving. And that's one of the areas that I say it's the best camp we've had. Again, a lot of real targeted areas. Every athlete on first night, they put down their initial chain, and we looked at their initial chain and what their first three things they wanted to get done. Because once you get into those first three, somewhere in there is where the modification will happen. Somewhere in there is where the opposing athlete is going to do something to us that's going to either derail that or make us move into it a different way. And so looking at that ahead of time and gaining that perspective, we really felt good about the athletes. We started with their position. Obviously, control wrestling's always about controlling you first and then attempting to control your opponent. Another area that we worked really hard on was initial response, first response. Like, someone puts a tie on you, say a typical one, two-on-one underhook tie. And we get put into a tie. The second we get put in the tie, there needs to be an answer. Now, sometimes the answer might be nothing more than a foot movement enough to create a new angle. It may be a rib knockoff to off balance. And realize that as we off balance, we had not done a lot of off balancing work, I think. And as we found with our athletes, our cadet athletes, that as they off balance them, they would sometimes off balance themselves. And so those were areas of getting them to where they really felt in a really strong position. Zach Dominguez does a great job in this. Sean Sheldon was with us in camp. I mean, we just had great, you know, everything about it was just, it was really good. They, like I said, they had paperwork to do every night and they did it. They really broke down their own plans in their own words. And then we looked at a way to adjust that to where our coaches could fit their needs. So I just think that overall it was, I think we had a really strong plan going in, but we really had the right people. So
we always talk about how do we get Greco to the highest level possible, and people ask questions about winning medals, especially at the senior level. Doesn't it begin with the cadets as far as the future of our Greco-Roman World Championship team program?
Every moment in our workouts, every step of the way, we wanted to make sure that we treated these athletes as if, you know, we had six extras in camp, six sparring partners. Two of them were our number twos, and we worked down the list. So we had a really strong group in there. But at cadets, two things we're working with. The first one is what you said. It is our future. It's our direct future. This is the start of that chain. And Coach Lindland feels the exact same way. He was in camp, most of camp. I know that he had Pan Ams coming up, but he was still in camp almost every session and gave a lot of time towards that. Muhammad was in. We had a lot of other coaches come in. Ike Anderson was in. We really tried to dump a lot of time. A lesson I learned a long time ago, I think the 93 world team, Zach Dominguez was on that team, Kale Son and some others. But one of the things that we did was Brad Beering was in on that camp as an alternate. And, you know, at this age group, they were cadets then. We just don't know which one of these young men will be the next guy. And so we need to treat all of them as if they're the next guy and then let them figure out, you know, how long they want to make this journey. So, you know, lessons that we've learned in the past, I think is another part of this, is that, you know, they're cadets. You know, it's a 4-minute match. There's an awful lot that can happen. And domestically, we may have the number one guy right now this year. That's what we've determined. But what will next year look like? What will 5 years from now look like? And we have to be cognizant of that. We have to look at that and say, as we're standing in front of these young men and we only have 90 minutes at a time with them because we wanted to keep our practices short and crisp and intense and not deplete ATP values and keep their recovery rates very high. We marked all time that they had off the mat. So we charted, you know, rest times and recovery. We demonstrated to them what active rest was. And we try to put a lot of things into them that our senior level athletes use.
Gary, you talked about paperwork. They've been diligent with that. What goes into that? What kind of assignments are you sending them back with?
Well, every day we had an assignment. First day, it started off with what their actual chain was. You know, what are, you know, it, this, we showed them pieces of film from Euros and from last year's World Championships where, you know, there were scores in 8 seconds. And you shake hands you better be braced up and feet firm because that match is starting. And so that was one of the areas of saying, you know, if you walk into it without a plan, I mean, you know, all major sports go in with a strategy and a plan. And one of the things that we find in wrestling is that we do not analyze our matches strong enough. I mean, look at what baseball breaks down. I mean, they'll tell you what a pitcher makes on a Tuesday at 4 o'clock. I mean, you know, what pitch he's going to throw. And we do not break it down to that degree because we realize there is a libro to it, a freedom that, you know, one response meets another response. The best time to score is right after a score and an attempted score. And so those are all going to be new movements. But if you can get to a proper chain where you feel really comfortable, if you're really good in a lead leg underhook and you can get to that lead leg underhook and hold position, then the whole time that you're in that position in that moment, you know what way he's going to try to get out. You know what way you're going to try to advance. So you stand a much greater chance at staying out in front of the action instead of behind it. And getting them to verbalize what they believe their offense is always interesting. I met with a junior athlete last night over this, and we started down through the process of some of this paper trailing. And, you know, just getting them to realize that, you know, sometimes they're underhooking off their trail leg side. Well, they know they've got to bring their trail leg up to the lead leg, but now where do I circle? And it's things like that, that if we do not have this ingrained in them and to where they feel really comfortable in their own shoes and what their own offense is, I mean, I think one of the worst things I see is sometimes I see us with a plan and we walk out and the opposing athlete puts an underhook on us. And all of a sudden now we're trying to get out of the underhook and he puts us right back in it. Well, if he does that twice, then who's going down first? You know what I mean? We are. And even that kind of stuff, like, you know, trying to recognize and talk to them about, you know, sometimes younger athletes, they'll have a plan in their mind going, I got to make sure he goes down first. Well, sometimes the referees have a different plan. So, you know, if you want him to put down first and you work really hard at it, but the referee still puts you down first, that cannot break. You know, you've got to remain positive and you got to play the cards that you're dealt. And I think that that's one of those things that if we planned for that ahead of time and we did that, we demonstrated some techniques for them and we threw some curveballs their way during practice time. We videotaped every practice and we're going to videotape every junior practice. And then we can go back and look at that and see these areas where sometimes, you know, again, being comfortable while being uncomfortable is very important. You know, if we can be comfortable in these moments that we're very uncomfortable, that's what determines an older athlete. And one of the biggest goals that we had for these cadets coming into camp, and we told them right up front, is we've got 5 days that we want to age you. You know, we want to age you. We want you to be different in 5 days in the way that you think and the way that you act. That demonstrates that you're a more mature wrestler, that you can handle some of these moments that are unexpected.
Are you ready for some rapid fire here? I want to give you the name of each of the 10 cadet world team members for the Greco-Roman team. And if you could just give us a few quick hits on each athlete, it'll help us put into perspective who we have and why we should watch these athletes.
Great.
45 kilograms, Mason Geloff.
Geloff is a young man that he really took to heart. He knows what he wants and he goes out there for it. He has got an amazing first move. And as he hits that move, what I think we've got into him now is a second move. And so, he has no hesitation. And that's, one of those areas that he will hit it from multiple places. And so people can watch video on him, but I don't know that that's going to be enough to stop that first move. So that's one of those areas he's really strong in, and his parterre is very good.
48 kilograms, Corey Land.
Corey and Mason were great training partners. Corey's another one of those that as we progressed in the week, I think that he got stronger and stronger because he's a tough, you know, he's a tough guy. He brings the battle. He hand fights well, and he stays in really good position with his feet. He loads his feet up underneath your hips as much as he can. So it's good. We're looking forward to him.
51 kilograms, Jet Strickenberger.
You know, Jet might be the most talented athlete on the team. I mean, he is very talented. He has some areas that he's growing in right now that's really going to complement that. And as he works through that, for him, discipline is an area that as he increases his discipline, his talent is going to shine more.
55 kilograms, Connor Kanopic.
Connor is like a lot of guys out of Nebraska, especially out of that Papillion area with Zach and crew. Coach Dominguez does a great job with his guys, but to stay on task with Connor, Connor is another one of those guys. Very talented, but unbelievably disciplined in his approach. And, you know, you catch young athletes, sometimes they'll reach for something, like they'll reach for an underhook and it will cost them. They'll try to dig an underhook in more than they should have. And that's not Connor. Connor is very good at, if it needs to be shallow, it's shallow. And the other thing is that he'll walk you to the edge and he'll make you make mistakes. Another thing that Corey Land's pretty good at too.
60 kilograms, Parker Decker.
Parker is a tank. You know, he has a low center of gravity. He's got a very good combination move. He knows how to get into his drag series, but he's got movements off of that drag. Like he'll hit a drag and then he'll move you off the backside of it. So he takes ground well. So, you know, him getting started on his tie and getting into his ties are critical. If he gets that, he's got a really good path to success through his own chain that I think he works well. But again, the biggest thing is he's going to win hand fights because he's just so powerful.
65 kilograms, Robert Perez.
Robert's probably the other guy that's right there with Jet. I think he's an unbelievable talent. This young man, again, like a couple of others on this team, they're good at all three styles. They're the type of guy that's going to compete for a triple crown. Robert is that he's very quiet. He's kind of a silent assassin. I mean, he's quiet, but man, when he wrestles and he wrestles quiet, he wrestles calm. And he, the moment you make a mistake though, he's anticipated the mistake you're about to make. And so it's really good. His talent really shines out in some of his counter wrestling. He'll get started in a move, and if it goes a different direction, he's more than willing to go that direction with you and do something with it.
71 kilograms, Daniel Segura.
You know, Daniel might, I think he's the best, what we call level two wrestler. I mean, he is he's a counter guy that he gets into situations. And like we talked to him at camp about this, about, you know, just keep getting into situations because he's one of those guys, and you've seen him before. I mean, these guys that somehow it looks bad momentarily, and then all of a sudden it's really shiny. It's really good. And he can go from a situation where it's like you get that little, oh, don't do that. And then next thing you know, he's done something great with it. And so one of the biggest things that I think our staff learned about him is just put him in that situation. He's one of those guys that, again, you know, like we did all this planning work, right? And the plan for him is just to get into it. Just get into it, because what he does on the backside is stuff that we can't coach. I mean, you know, a lot of what these special athletes do is they do things that we can't coach that. That's them. And we can't even lay out a plan for these guys. His plan, again, is going to be in the first three things he does. Initial contact. Once he gets contact, getting into his tie. But man, after that, I told, you know, we just talked to him over and over again, said, look, after that, whatever it comes, you just, because again, he's like a couple of them. He doesn't hesitate. The second you go to react to him, he's going to have almost an intuitive answer for you. And, And sometimes when he's in these transitional phases is when he's in the very best position that he's in the match, which is kind of unusual. You know, a lot of guys like Parker can hold an unbelievable stance, you know, and Daniel, I think sometimes he starts off a little bit unbalanced, but man, does he hits another gear. So we're really excited about him.
80 kilograms, Tate Picklow.
Yeah, you know, Tate's another one of those, very much like Parker in discipline. But I think that another area that he has that we really, really like as a coaching staff is he's that thinking warrior. He's the guy, you know, and every team has one of these guys that, you know, he's one of the first ones in the door. He's one of the last ones out the door. Because at the end of practice, he's the one that's, coach, can you show me this? Can you get with this? And he did that up and down our coaching staff. I mean, he had Coach Lindland over there. He had, I mean, he's one of those guys. He wants a little bit more at the end of every practice. And so, some of the stuff that Sean Sheldon worked with him and Parker, you know, just getting him on small things. But Tate's another one of those guys. He's a very good example of a thinking warrior. The most important thing that he has is between his ears. I mean, he thinks things through, but he also runs a great balance. He doesn't overthink too much. And that's kind of, you know, sometimes you get that thinking and he overthinks himself and hesitates. And I don't see Tate doing that very much. So we're excited about him too.
92 kilograms, Tyler Hanna.
Yeah. You know, Tyler was a, you know, he's again, so many of these guys are from great clubs, and, Tyler comes to us from combat. Coach Stelt was not able to be in camp. He'll be with us this week in junior camp, but he is going to trip with us. And that's going to be a real positive because Tyler Hanna is one of his club members. And so, you know, we get so much. I mean, there's so many great coaches across the country that builds great habits. You know, at national team camps, we work to bring about, you know, again, that change to try to draw them a little more internationally based. But overall, what they come with, the skills, those are club coaches. Those are RTC coaches doing that work day in, day out with these athletes. And Tyler's one of those guys. He has an unbelievable underhook, and he pulls with his underhook. He elevates and pulls. And very few athletes at that age does it, especially the degree that he does it. And what we try to work with him on is just getting into it more often, you know, raising his cyclical rate of exchange and getting into his ties. So if he could, you know, if he moves, he's got such a great series that if he could get that series, if he could move that series from getting it four times in a match to getting it six to seven, now all of a sudden we've got another score probably in each match. And so, again, Tyler, he knows what he wants. The whistle blows, that's what he's going to go get. And so, and he's got a really good plan B too, which we try to get into every athlete, but he's got a great plan B that goes opposite side with that I think those two are going to complement. We look to get that as often as we could, but I really do think his series is really good. But again, testament back to Coach Shelton and all the other club coaches and RTC coaches that make a difference in these athletes.
And then we end with one strong dude, 110 kilograms, Braxton Meixel.
Yes, strong. Strong's the word. He is a horse. I think the first time I met his father, it explained it really well because his father is that guy. And you know, Braxton is a guy that when he gets into his wheelhouse, when he gets into his plan, things work out. I think that's one of the things that we've got to do with him is just keep him moving enough that he gets into his plan enough. But he has really good answers for people that try to bring offense to him domestically, and we hope that that transfers internationally. That's one of his strong points that he's had throughout this series. And this guy, like so many of these athletes, they've been a warrior they came right out of folk style and went right into international style wrestling. And these guys have not had a weekend off. I'm hoping right now, and I know our team hopes that They're getting really good rest as we make this final preparation. We sent out notices yesterday to that fact again. We spent an awful lot of time just on recovery and active rest work with them during camp because we really feel they need it. They put the work in. Now it's about getting that taper down to a fine line to where they can come out and really work explosive actions in short matches and really make this happen. But no, Braxton, you know, he went to, again, wrestling and everything, him and Tate Boat, Jet, that they went up to Fargo, and we had four of these athletes go to Fargo, and you know, you're always hit and miss with that. You know, is it right? Is it not right? I mean, that's the fine tuning of what we're doing in the training cycle. But, you know, he did not wrestle Greco, but again, not a major thing, but just, you know, we felt that he needed a little bit of rest with, he had an ear that we had to get taken care of. And so the doctor advised that we give that time to actually rest and get him off his feet a little bit. So I'm looking forward. I hope that he's well rested and when he comes back in. I know he's put all the work in. So I think this would turn out for him.
Hey, and then we'll end with this. There's someone's voice that I hear at a lot of wrestling tournaments, Dorothy Mayab. Do you know her?
I do know her. Yes. And, I don't know. I'm torn. I'm very proud of her for what she does for our sport. And, obviously I'm thankful for my opportunity to have a relationship with this woman, but she is, she has such a drive and a passion for our sport. She loves what she does. Last night we were in the van coming down from Denver, and, I passed the phone around to about three different people, I think. So, you know, she's made ties with so many athletes. That's part of what we love about our sport, right? Is that everybody is a warrior that's disciplined, that really has an awful lot to offer anytime that we sit down and talk to another wrestler. And, she's taken that into account, and she, I know she keeps me going.
Gary, thanks for this time. We're looking forward to watching this Greco-Roman Cadet World Championship team, and we will see you over in Bulgaria.
Thank you guys so much for your coverage and your support of these athletes. They've done an awful lot of great things, and now it's really down to what we've been saying. We're getting better, but you know what getting better means is when we go out and get medals, and that's what we're after, and we're going to keep pushing until it happens, but we really think this is a great group. So super excited about it. Again, thank you guys so much. We appreciate you.
Thanks, Gary.
See ya.
Andy, don't let anybody tell you that Gary Mayab does not know Greco-Roman wrestling.
Nobody's ever told me that, Kyle.
But if they do, don't let anybody tell you.
I won't.
Because that dude is
who's foolish enough to make such a statement?
Nobody after this. If they listen to this, they aren't going to be making that statement, because that dude is in tune with his athletes, with the sport, some of the high-level stuff. I'd like to see him get in touch with Duke about their analytics. Seems like he could appreciate that based on what he said. He was dialed into baseball, which should make you happy, but he had a lot of high-level thoughts there about scoring, and I liked what he said about wrestling being that reactive sport and that there's more that we can dive into, and Gary Mayab is one of those guys that dove deep into what we can do with analytics in the sport of wrestling.
Organized, right?
Very. I like what he had to say. Just very in tune and just scoring once and then the percentages on scoring twice. There was just so much there that I hope people appreciated what he had to say about Greco, and gets me excited about this Cadet Greco-Roman World Team. It sounds like after him saying this is the best training camp they've had, I don't want to put expectations, but I think that you're going to see a good product on the mat.
Yeah, I think so. I think so as well. I mean, it's so hard to tell because cadet age, you're dealing with a lot of young athletes who've never probably been overseas. This will be the first international trip for a lot of them. First time wrestling foreigners for a lot of them. First time going over, 8 time zones away, getting acclimated. Just a lot of variables that go outside of just getting yourself to a high level of performance, but throws a little bit of a wrench into things sometimes, but we'll see how they perform.
You're right. It's not just hopping in a vehicle and driving to the local tournament anymore. This is international travel and a lot of things can change. And you know as well as I do that you have to be ready for something to happen. Things won't go perfect at any tournament, but especially international tournaments, something will happen. And so this will be a good test for those guys.
Hey, and one of the guys on the team, Corey Land, as of Akron, I don't know if he's been on a plane since, but after he won his spot on the team, on the Cadet Greco World Team, he said never been on a plane before.
So it's a lot, man. There's going to be a lot of eye-opening experiences for these guys. We get to number two in our feature for the Cadet World Championships. Jessica Medina will be our guest. You ready to pick her brain, Andy?
Yeah.
Let's do it. Our next guest is the National Women's Developmental Coach for USA Wrestling. She will be with the Women's Cadet Freestyle Team. Jessica Medina, how are you?
I'm doing well. Thanks for asking. How about yourself?
We're doing great. We're excited about having the Cadet World Championships live on track wrestling. And as you think about this and the Cadet World Championships, what do you want to see these women get out of this experience?
Well, you know, just being a former athlete myself, you know, at the developmental level, I would hope that, you know, besides the experience competing internationally, competing on the world level, that they would continue to utilize the resources that we're giving them and this foundation moving forward. You know, I'm hoping that we will see the benefits of it coming, you know, in the next 1 to 2 quads. And truly, you know, and I talked to the team about this last night, in the process, they're making memories, they're making friends, and we're all Team USA and we sharpen each other. So my hope is that not only are they getting these opportunities that some of our senior level athletes don't usually get. My hope is that we're instilling these lessons in them, tools for them to become better, whether they're here or not, and just developing on and off the mat.
This is an interesting phase for cadet women's wrestling because we're really behind in women's wrestling is that we want to get all 50 states to sanction women's wrestling at some point. We don't have that yet, but do you feel like this is really an opportunity to grow women's wrestling with this world team?
Yes, I definitely believe that, you know, and I think the momentum with just sanctioning has picked up not only at the high school level, but the college level, you know, and I wouldn't say so much that we're behind. I think, you know, quality is what we're seeing, you know, and instead of quantity, you know, and I think we want to keep that momentum going of adding sanctioning to those states. But, you know, we're seeing some really tough cadets come out of these states and really, I think they're turning heads, not just at their high schools and they're really changing the dynamic of female wrestling, female athletics, and especially with Olympics coming up, you know, I think it's a great time to highlight the sport with our young athletes and, you know, just getting to know them in this group. They're really great individuals and, you know, it's great to be able to work with them, you know, not just once a year at the World Championships. You know, we have these developmental camps where we're seeing these girls' personalities and figuring out, you know, who they are, how they're representing Team USA. And I think that is what we want to put out there. And people are going to want to get to know these girls and back them.
Jessica, what do you attribute the uptick in skill level at this age group to?
You know, I think it's a lot of things. So a lot of these girls have been around this development system that, you know, Emma Randall, Clarissa Chun, and Terry Steiner have developed over the years. And, you know, I remember a time this didn't exist. So I think that's brought a spotlight on focusing on freestyle, you know, and that's a lot of these girls are on their folk style teams. They're competing against boys. They're tough. But now we're spotlighting that transition into freestyle season and, you know, and also pushing them into the college level and saying, freestyle is the future for women's wrestling, for girls wrestling. And so I think that's been a huge advantage because there's girls who want to train freestyle all year. And then programs like Wyoming Seminary and, you know, I think a big part too has been we received the David Lehman Fund and we're able to send girls on tours and get those international experiences. So, you know, I think it's also bringing that spotlight of, I need to be at women's nationals. I need to be competing freestyle. And it's pushing those girls and that level, because this year at nationals, watching the U15 girls, I'll tell you what, those semis were exciting. And 10 years ago, that's not something you would have seen. And I've seen a huge growth in that. And those U15 girls are cadet girls as well. So it's really exciting to see more of a push for freestyle early on.
When you're at a camp like this, do you ever watch and see some of the technique they're hitting and just say, wow, they are hitting some high level stuff at this age?
Oh, yeah. At Nationals, I was pretty impressed. I just come on staff in April. And so, I was really impressed, just matchups and some really tough girls and tough finals. And, you know, especially at these camps, we've brought in some extra partners for these camps. We've limited them. So, we've got some tough girls right there, in the number two, number three spot, pushing these number one girls. But there's some girls on the team who I just watch. They put their athleticism on top of technique. And, I attribute that to their coaches and what they're doing year round, and also to being around this group. And they're continuing, they see each other at these tournaments, right? Whether it's folk style, freestyle season. So I think this group is really sharpening each other. And it's really fun to watch them in the room and just tweak these things leading up to world championships.
How would you describe the culture of this cadet world team?
Yeah, so the cadet world team, we brought them out for camp. And, some teams, you've got a bunch of athletes who know each other, have seen each other around, who have either been on world teams. And this year is interesting because our only returner is Sterling Diaz, and she's also returning medalist. But everyone else on this team is coming from a U15 team, that schoolgirl Pan Am team. And so they haven't been to a world championships, and some of them know each other and some of them are getting a feel. But, what's great about this camp is we've been able to just, come together, and they've gotten some time to get to know each other and the dynamic. So what I like about this team is, they're shy. I got to open them up. And that's usually this age group. But I see so much potential in them, not just as wrestlers, but becoming confident, because now they have girls to look up to. I asked a lot of them, who's your favorite wrestler? Helen Merlis, Adeline Gray. And it's exciting for them to be able to name female athletes. They want to be like they want to win a gold medal. And it's really cool to see how much potential is there. And it's just a matter of getting them familiar, with competing at a world level or competing in an international tournament. So I think there's so much potential here.
How much do you have input or influence on their college decision? Do you talk to them about going to college, or is there advice you give them? What kind of conversations do you have on that level?
Well, it's funny, just coming from the college circuit, I was coaching in WCWA at Ferrum, and that's actually a really important topic for me. I don't know that I talk to the cadets as much, unless, they come to me and specifically talk about college. Usually I have to kind of gear them into what a training cycle looks like them while they're in high school, because, more of these girls are saying, I want to train freestyle all year. What does that look like? So that's kind of where I'm guiding these cadets. It's more of my juniors. When we had junior Pan Am team in, it was some of those younger girls who were thinking about college or coming from college programs. And I was able to just sit down and connect and say, what do you like about your program? And how can you, share with, this athlete who's looking into programs? And, my biggest advice is you've got to do your homework, and you've got to visit the campus. You've got to get to know the coach, and truly you got to know yourself and your style, because if you don't know that, then you're going to have a hard time. There's so many programs popping up. You're going to have a hard time figuring out what works for you. So, I think, and the other part of it is, use wrestling to pay for college, find a financial situation that's going to work for you, as well as the team dynamic, as well as the coaching style. And at the end of the day, I tell every single girl, your degree is invaluable, and, beyond medals and beyond any of your accomplishments, no one can take that degree from you. So that's a big push for me with that age group.
How long before we get NCAA sanctioned women's wrestling? What's your crystal ball say?
Oh, wow. Yeah. So I'm really looking at different numbers. from the inside, the outside. You know, I think it's going to start with some of these programs, just starting the program because they're waiting for that sanctioning. And I think, you know, they've got to start it. And I think that's going to push the timing on this. So, you know, we've had the recommendation for emerging sports status. So, you know, my hope is 3 to 4 years. You know, I would hope that's realistic. And, you know, some are hoping a little bit sooner and others, you know, are saying 10 years, you know. And so to me, I think it's going to be sooner than later if these programs get started before we get that sanctioning.
What do the girls at this level need to succeed? What do you need to instill in them to achieve their best?
You know, a lot of it is confidence. And, you know, just I spent the summer with U15, cadet Pan Am team, junior Pan Am team, and now this cadet world team. And I've done developmental camps even before this position. You know, I think the big thing is confidence. And it's tough now being a teenager, you know, and in this time frame, just with social media and, you know, what you put out there and branding yourself, and you're worrying so much about your image. And sometimes I think we forget about going back to basics and being confident in what you're doing and not having to display that, letting the work do itself. And so, you know, for me, I think really coming behind them and saying who you are is validated, whether you make it to the podium or whether you have so many followers on social media, because I think there's a really big link, you know, and I think keeping them focused on what makes wrestling great, you know, and that's hard work, that's discipline. It's the trials that just bring adversities and show that true character. And so it's really simple, right? And it's so tough because there's so many distractions. And, you know, at the same time, we're trying to push women's wrestling. We're trying to promote wrestling in general and put it out there. So we do have to advocate for the sport, you know, but I think for our younger group, they've got to get back to the basics of who they are and be confident in that. Because when we do step on the world stage, you know, it, especially if it's their first time, they're going to go back to, you know, what they're doing on a daily basis. And so I think that's going to be a big thing, especially for girls. And I think that's why wrestling is such a great sport in developing that. And I think it's realistic, right? You put on a singlet, you wrestle in front of hundreds, thousands of people, and, you know, it's just you, your opponent on the mat, and what better way to build confidence? So that's one thing I think will solve a lot or help improvement.
There are 10 women's weights, and if you would do us the honor, we'd just like to go through each of the weight classes and each of our participants at the Cadet World Championships. And we'll start at 88 kilograms with Sterling Diaz, who you mentioned earlier, but if you could just give us a few thoughts on her and what we can expect from her.
Yeah, so we have Sterling at 40, and she's just a solid kid, solid on the mat, off the mat. She won Fargo. This year she won folk style national championships at 100 pounds. Last year she was our cadet bronze medalist. So it's really cool to have her on the team, just picking her brain, talking about expectations for this year, and also kind of working through the pressure of what it's like being the only returner to the team and medalist. So she's a stud, and I think she's going to go out there and scrap. And, you know, I wouldn't be surprised to see her back, you know, and this time in the finals.
43 kilograms, Alexandra Scott-Nicky.
Yes, Alex. She's an amazing kid. She's been around this program and the developmental camps and structure of the program. And I think we've seen a lot of fruit from that. This year, she was on our U15 team. She took the gold medal, pretty dominant performance. She was number two at our 16 U folk style nationals, and just a solid athlete. She does a lot of right things on and off the mat. She asks great questions, and I think she's developing herself really well for the future, and she's a scrapper. So she'll go out there and she will wrestle. She's a tough kid. So hoping to see her bring another world medal home.
46 kilograms, Sage Mortimer.
Yeah, we got Sage. Sage, yeah, she was another one of our U15 Pan Am team members last year. And so she'll be joining us on the team. She won Fargo, you know, both in the 16U and the junior championships. Last year, she won the cadet championships. And last year, she was, you know, she made history making the Greco All-American rounds. And so she's a tough kid. She can wrestle upper body. She can throw. She can body lock. She's not afraid, you know, to put someone to their back or go for those big points. So I think she's going to go out there and scrap. This is her first world championship. So I'm interested to see, you know, what she brings to the mat and that confidence of just wrestling at Fargo and riding that wave into world championships.
49 kilograms, Cristel Rodriguez.
Yes, Cristel. So she is our 16U folk style champ and junior folk style champ. She's a stud. You know, just watching her compete this week and live and watching her on the mat, she's quick. She's athletic. She's got that gut instinct. I don't have to tell her to go, go, go. Sometimes I have to slow her down. So, you know, and that's another one that was on our schoolgirl Pan Am team. So this is her first world team as well. And I think she's going to go out there and not hold back. I think she's going to wrestle and hopefully bring us home a medal as well.
53 kilograms, Adriana Dorado Marin.
Yep, Adriana. So she is also our 16U Fargo champ. 2018 Fargo Cadet Champ. Tough girl. She's got a good, great style, long, lengthy, gets to the legs, real scrappy. So, you know, I'm interested to see what she can do as well.
57 kilograms, Skylar Hattendorf.
Awesome. Yeah, Skylar. So she is from New Hampshire, and she has also, you know, I've seen her through the circuit kind of rise up. She actually started off with judo. And so what's interesting about Skylar is she started wrestling when she was 9 years old, I believe. And I believe seven, she started judo. So she's actually been around both programs. And so she's actually on the junior, the cadet judo world team and our cadet world team. So she's a two-time world team member just this year. And so really she's been training all summer. And, you know, I think we can expect big things from her. She's another one, right, who throws, who is great, you know, threatening upper body. She's also been working those executions. She gets to the legs. And I think that's sometimes the hard part with our judo athletes. You know, they're not always wanting to take those shots and attempts and risk. But I know I've seen her develop and really work those leg attacks. I think she can be really dangerous.
61 kilograms, Kylie Welker.
Kylie, she's a special one. So Kylie, you know, I had the opportunity of talking with her, and, you know, Kylie came back. I believe she's had three knee surgeries, you know, might be four. Don't quote me on that. So she had a tough year. She had multiple injuries. And so, you know, she came back this year and she showed up to nationals and she was on fire. You would not have thought she took a year off. And so just kind of talking to her and prepping her mentally, just hearing her confidence, you know, she's very mature. She, you know, just hearing what the injuries did for her, it would have been easy for her to kind of fall into that downward slump, but she actually used these injuries to propel her. And so she's actually come out to the training center this past month. She's been training with our seniors. She's been getting her butt kicked a little bit more than she's used to. And just being around the seniors, I think she's learned a lot in this last month. So now it's great to have the cadets in, because now she's flowing. Now she's hitting her executions with confidence. She knows. She said, I've been wrestling with the seniors all summer and I have confidence going into cadet world championships. She's like, no one's going to be tougher than some of these senior girls I wrestle with. So I'm very excited to see her compete.
65 kilograms, Lillian Freitas.
Yeah, Lillian. So she's another one of our schoolgirl cadet, our schoolgirl U15 Pan Am. And so this is also her first world team. And so Lily's a California girl. She's tough. I think, you know, with her, I'm interested to see, you know, what and how she's going to compete at the world level and just kind of getting her ready with this prep camp. So, you know, I think we can expect to see a lot of good wrestling. you know, and I'm truly interested to see how we can develop her and get her on the world stage, because, you know, going from Pan Ams and going to world championships can be a big jump. But for her, I've seen a lot of composure with her at camp and just knowing what she needs and getting ready. And, you know, I'm excited for her to compete as well.
69 kilos, Amit Ellor.
Amit, yeah. So Amit, she's definitely been the talk of the town, you know, and just a really dominant wrestler. She's 2019 California State Champ, 2018 Triple Crown winner, and another one of our schoolgirl, you know, U15 members. And so she's going to come out, and, you know, I think we're all excited to see her wrestle. You know, I believe, again, another world medalist, you know, can come out there and compete. And, you know, I think it's going to be interesting to see, you know, her training. She kind of travels and gets a lot of different, you know, international partners, experience. She trains with Valentin Kalika. So I know that she's been really prepping for this event. So I'm interested to see how she's going to put that together, because although she has not had that world stage experience, she's definitely getting that international, you know, feel and practices and partners. So looking for big things with her.
And then we end with 73 kilograms, Kennedy Blades.
Yes, Kennedy. She is definitely, she's been a powerhouse, you know. I had the opportunity of watching her kind of grow up, and I lived in Illinois, and I remember her winning the IKWF state championships and dominating. And so, and her sister. So, you know, she just came back from Fargo. She's, you know, won a few titles. She was on our school girl Pan Am team last year, and then she fell short in the finals of cadet trials, and that was to Macy Kilty, and, you know, who's a tough competitor. So, you know, I think with her, I'm excited to have her compete, because she doesn't always get pushed, but when it's go time, there's no stopping her. She just has an amazing feel. She just wrestles. She just goes. She doesn't stop. And it's amazing, because she has a lot of athleticism and a lot of talent. And just the fact that she's been a part of a really strong system, you know, being in Illinois, you know, wrestling with the boys, and then, you know, going to Wyoming SEM. And then, you know, this year she medaled, she took gold at 5 international competitions. So that right there is going to tell you a lot about how she can perform at this world championships.
That ends our rapid fire. Let's end our conversation with you on this. What do these gals think about international travel? Are they ready for that?
Oh, definitely. A lot of them have either traveled for, you know, just competition out of the country. Some of them have only, you know, traveled to Pan Am. So, you know, I think they're excited, and the fact that we can get them out here and prep them, and they know our faces, they know our cadet world team coaches, they know the staff that's been out here, and they know we're going to be traveling with them. I think they're excited. Some of them don't truly know what to expect, you know, but I think they're so focused on what they need to do right now that they're just focused on their performance and really that preparation leading up to it. So, you know, I think they're excited more than anything.
Jessica Medina, you are great. Thank you for this conversation. Thanks for filling us in. We look forward to watching this team on track wrestling, and then, of course, live from Sofia, Bulgaria. We wish you all the best.
Awesome. Thanks for covering us. Appreciate it.
Thanks to Jessica Medina for providing insight into the cadet women's freestyle team. That's going to be fun to watch them. And she broke it down, and there's a lot of women on that team that got me excited to watch wrestle. This is going to be a lot of fun, and I think this is going to be a quality team. And I like what she said, especially about her interest in bringing women's wrestling to the next level for college wrestling. And I think that's a big component of this, is to see where they end up and make them stars through the college wrestling system. And I like that she's thinking that way, and her being a former collegiate wrestling coach, I think she has a vested interest in that, and for good reason.
Yeah, and one of the things that immediately came to my mind now, 3 years ago, it's hard to believe it's been 3 years since Helen Marulis won Olympic gold.
Yeah.
But one of the things that I immediately started thinking about afterward was just how many young female wrestlers in the United States that would impact and how that would change the game for the United States as far as women's wrestling is concerned. And you heard her talk about it a little bit there.
She mentioned Helen Merulis, Adeline Gray. They are stars in the sport. And it's just like anything, when you have someone that you can identify with and see reach the top level, that's a crucial moment for anyone. And I think that's hugely important to be able to have that. And it took a little while to get to that point. 2004 was the first year that women's wrestling entered into the Olympics. They only had four weight classes at the time, but we've come a long way since then, and we have Helen to look to. And this year could be a year that Adeline Gray makes history, could have the most across the board men's freestyle, Greco, women's freestyle. She might have the most world championships in U.S. history. So a lot on the line here for the women's program. Up next, we have Kevin Jackson. He is a three-time world and Olympic champion. He knows what it's like to get to that high bar. He's the developmental coach. What do you say we get to Coach KJ?
Let's bring in KJ.
Our final guest is someone who has triple gold, two world championship gold medals, Olympic gold medal, and he's going into the Louisiana State Athletics Hall of Fame. Kevin Jackson, how are you?
I'm good, Kyle. How are you?
Doing good. How does that feel to go into LSU's Hall of Fame?
It's fun, man. It's exciting. You know, when I got the call, it was a surprise. But I look forward to the induction ceremony and going to my old stomping grounds and watching a football game and reminiscing. And so it's an honor for sure.
And we want to go on record as saying that we think you're a better athlete than Shaquille O'Neal. So we just want to get that out there.
I think we're tied for, he might have one more world title than me. So, you know, my era, we're always about the credentials and all about world titles. So he has me by one. So I think he might edge me out from that standpoint, but you definitely could, appreciate the comparison.
You could take him down though, right?
You know, I tried to take down a basketball player. Well, we tried to throw him in the pool at an outing that we had with our all sports were invited to this barbecue, and there was a pool out there, and I think his name was John Williams. I don't know if you guys remember John Williams, a great basketball player for LSU, played in the pros, and he was about 6'8" himself, and he was thick like Shaquille, and I grabbed him and tried to throw him in the pool, and his length was too great for me. So if his length was too great for me, Shaquille might be a little big for me.
Well, hey, we're talking about a little bit smaller guys with the cadet world championship team. We're on the horizon with that. Of course, you're the developmental coach at USA Wrestling, so you know these guys really well. What do you want to see out of this world championships, cadet world championships? What do you want these guys to get out of this experience?
Well, I just want them to mature as young men, mature as athletes, young men of character, wrestlers of character, and continue to improve and develop on and off the mat. And I think we have a great group of kids. They've been on campus now at the training center a couple times. They came out for our senior world team training camp earlier in the month, and they trained with our junior world team, trained with the senior world team, and then they came out for their world team training camp. They got here on the 18th. We leave for Bulgaria on the 25th. And so I want to see these guys wrestle their true potential. I want to see them walk away from Bulgaria feeling and knowing that they competed to their true potential. And I like to see them accomplish their goals. And I think our goals are to be world champions individually and as a team. We're not scared to say that, to verbalize that. But we also recognize that it's not going to be given to us, and we have to go out there and earn it. So I'd like to see these guys just perform their true abilities and have a great time at the World Championship.
One of the trends is how fast these guys are developing and how good they are right now. Give us a compare and contrast on where these cadet wrestlers are compared to maybe other eras of cadet wrestlers.
It keeps getting better. I'm amazed when I watch Fargo, when I watch Akron, I watch all of our age group events, just the technical skill, the toughness, the maturity, and just the passion and love that they have for the sport. But when you look at them in general, I think there's a lot of things that have aided us in that development, including access to videos and being able to watch matches from all around the world at every single level. The RTCs have played a major role, and I think coaching has gotten better at every single level. And so these kids have been exposed to that. And it's, you know, I watch our cadet team, and, you know, I'd say that the majority, I'd say that the cadet team probably drill and know more skills and techniques than the majority of the college teams out there. When you look at this world team compared to just college team in general.
Kevin, with all that stuff in mind, where does having a cadet world championships, because that tournament didn't exist there for 11 years and it came back in 2011. Having that tournament, having a world level tournament to shoot for young kids like this, how much do you think that has helped in accelerating the growth process for these young stars?
Well, it's that carrot, right? It's that carrot. It's, you know, we all love to compete. These kids love to compete. And I mean, training is one thing, but being able to compete for championships is another. So when you put a world championship at the end of your year, that's the goal. That's what you're shooting for. That's what you're training to accomplish. And having a cadet world championships allows our young men to continue their training after Fargo or after Akron or after Vegas. In preparation to try to be the best in the world. And when you're trying to be the best in the world, you're doing everything in your power to create that opportunity and to take advantage of it once you get there. And so having a cadet world championships, and I think we'll probably see it at the U15 level, after a few years as well, but having a cadet world championship is motivation for coaches, athletes, to continue to get better and to try to be the very best they possibly can, not only in this country, but in the world.
These guys come from all different parts of the country, but they come to training camp together. How close are these guys? Do you feel like there's a good team bond?
Well, I mean, it's funny because, you know, they a lot of times they come and they know of each other, but they don't know each other. They never lived together in a dorm environment. They never traveled overseas. I think we have four guys on our team, four or five guys out of 10 that's never been overseas before, that's never wrestled in an international competition. And that's one thing that cadets allow to, it gives you experience for the next level to say that I have been overseas. I have competed in the international, and I have wrestled the Russian, Iranian, and Aja Prashan. I have competed with the best guys in the world. And so just that in general adds to the bonding and adds to the camaraderie that these guys have. But just going through everyday grind of training, like I said, they were with our senior level team, and so they've seen the highest level of training that we have in the country for wrestling. And for them to feel that and see that and do that as a group, and then to come back and have their own individual training camp and go through the grind and all the things that we put them through, and then them have an opportunity to live in the dorms and stay together for, you know, 7 to 10 days, creates a strong bond that wasn't there before, and it aids in our success once we get over there, because they're pulling for each other, they're cheering for each other, and they feel like that they're brothers. I've heard guys after the world championship, they go back home and say that I miss my guys, I miss my squad. It just shows that in a short period of time, great bonds, great relationships, great friendships can be made. So this team is bonding. I think they're really, really close. I think as we take the next couple of days and then we travel over to Bulgaria, that bond even becomes tighter. And then when we get into the war, it solidifies everything.
What advice do you give them about international travel? Do you have some things you can tell them to put them at ease?
Well, I think Brandon Slay, and hopefully I can get it right, he says something about be flexible, because if you're flexible, you will not get bent out of shape when things don't go your way. And internationally, and you guys know it well, that you can't count on your flights being on time. You can't count on getting to the hotel and your room being ready. You can't count on the food being what you're used to, or the environment, or everything is even when you travel overseas before. But you have to be able to adapt. You have to be able to control what you control. You have to be flexible. And you have to still understand the mission, make sure that you're prepared for the mission and that you're focused on what you've been trained to do in order to accomplish the mission. So we continue to communicate with these guys from our experiences. And I don't know if there's anything that we haven't experienced traveling overseas, from losing your luggage to getting there the day before, to not having access to wrestling match for a couple of days, to not having access to a scale from, you know, so everything that could probably be experienced from a travel standpoint, me and Coach Slay have experienced. And we just try to share some of those stories with these young men to let them know that, hey, it's not going to be perfect. And winning a world championship is not going to be easy. So let's just make sure that we're ready and we can stay focused and control the controllables.
Kevin, what's the most adverse situation you encountered internationally in terms of all the stuff you just outlined, whether it's travel or the deck
stack? Well, I mean, I could tell you a ton of stories, but we'd be here for a while. But when I was the national teams coach, we had a World Cup over in Uzbekistan, and our flights were delayed. We got separated from the sponsor. The team didn't arrive at the same time. But when I arrived with my probably seven athletes, they had lost four bags. So four athletes ended up in Uzbekistan without any gear. Another four were still out there stranded somewhere on their way to Uzbekistan. So the World Cup started. It was going to start the next day. Our athletes, four other athletes that were on the road or in transition to Uzbekistan, finally get there the day before competition starts. They don't have their bags. And so we get to the competition. Guys are all weighed in. We're ready to compete. We weighed in the night before. Those guys flew in and had to weigh in. But we get to competition, and no one has their bags, singlets, or shoes. So maybe four of our guys had shoes and singlets that they brought with. And so one guy was wrestling in a match. He would come off the mat, pull off the singlet, hand it to his teammate. Teammate would put the singlet on, put his teammate's shoes on, and walk out there and compete. And so I think that's pretty adverse when you're competing in an international World Cup competition. So that's one situation that happened out of many.
Well, if you will do us the honor, we want to do a rapid fire. I'm going to go through the lineup of the Cadet World Championship team. And if you could just offer some thoughts on each person, starting at 45 kilograms with Mark Anthony McGowan.
Well, Mark Anthony's a young man. He's an eighth grader, so he doesn't have a whole lot of international experience, but he looked great making our team. I think everything for him is a learning experience. But he is capable. He has all the skills. He's a hard worker. He's excited about the event. I think if he keeps things in proper perspective, he's going to perform very, very well. But every now and then, Mark, I forget how young he is. And being in eighth grade and on a cadet world team, I mean, that says a lot about the direction that he's going in. And I'm excited about seeing him wrestle, because you just never know what the rest of the world's going to bring at the lightest weight class in the world.
Internet sensation Steve O'Poulin at 48 kilos.
Yeah, and we talk about Steve O, and you know, Steve O is, you know, I've gotten to know him real well over the last couple of days, having him in camp, and just a great kid. I really, really enjoy him, and I think he shies away from that international thing. I think I just heard this week that his dad said that he never expected it to blow up like that. He was just following this kid around, videotaping this kid wrestling, because he really enjoyed watching this boy wrestle. And he showed the video to a friend, and the friend put it on YouTube, and it blew up. So he never expected that. But I'm really happy to see him reach that potential, reach that level that when we saw him as a kid, what we expected, what we thought would eventually happen, is that this kid has some skills, and he's a tough kid, and he's ahead of schedule. And you know, where's he going to end up at? And to see him on track on a world team with opportunity to be a world champion, that has to be rewarding and satisfying to his coaches and family, all the work they put in. But I think Steve-O's a little man, and I think men at the cadet level can win. But he also has a great skill set to compete at a world championship. So I think as long as he's himself, as long as he goes out there in that first 10 seconds and puts his hands on these guys and really is aggressive and attacks and stays on them the whole time, I think he has a great chance to do really, really well.
Returning world silver medalist Richie Figueroa at 51 kilos.
Well, you know, Richie is special. You never know what to expect out of a kid his first time at the Cadet World Championships, but when he stepped on the mat last year at the Cadet Worlds, I knew right away he was in it to win it, that he came to be a world champion. His skill set is great. His offensive abilities are, you know, second to none. He took silver last year. He dominated the Russian. I think he beat the Iranian last year as well. We end up losing to the defending world champion in the match that we were there. We were right there to win. And I think he felt like that he missed out on his opportunity to be a world champion last year. So he's come back in this year with the eye of the tiger and has done everything you've asked him to do in camp. And he just had individual meetings with all 10 of our athletes. And I can tell you, he's extremely focused. His weight's under control. I'm expecting him to be right there in that championship match with a chance to win. But obviously, like I said, you got to go out there and prove it. You got to take world titles. And so really excited to see what Richie's going to do at this world championship. But one thing he's doing for sure, he's being a leader because he's been there before, and he expects great things.
55 kilos, Robert Howard.
He's due. I don't want to put any undue pressure on him, but I think he said that himself, and I think we recognize that. And he's been to two world championships, and I think he probably should have had medals in those two, but the inexperience in his first one, and then we didn't probably nutrition properly, or his nutrition didn't probably affect him negatively for his first match. We didn't quite feel like he wanted to probably in that match, but I do know that he's capable. I do know skill wise and condition and the work he puts in that he's ready to take on this challenge. He's a youth Olympics world champion, our first youth Olympic world champion that we've ever had, and he's beaten two medalists from last year's world championship. So obviously, we feel Robert's going to be in the hunt. And he has all the skills to take him to where he wants to be. So third year, I'm not sure what we've ever had. I've heard we only had one three-time cadet world team member, and it's him. So so I think, you know, I think we all have an expectation for him to be standing when this whole thing is over.
60 kilograms, Jesse Mendez.
Oh, I've had a chance to work with Jesse probably three times in the last month and a half. He's come out to the training center. He came out immediately after the Pan Ams and spent some time with us. He came right back out for our world team camp, senior world team camp, and he's back now for our cadet camp. And just really like everything about the kid. He's humble, but he's a beast, man. He's aggressive. He's strong. He's tough. He loves to train. His skill level is high. Again, he's like a little man. He's going to bring the fight to his opponents. I think there's a couple things that we have to make sure we do well in order to stay in control of each and every single match. But really excited about Jesse. I think he loves it. He loves the sport. He loves competing and he loves training. And watching him train every single day. And I say this all the time. I don't know if guys are going to win or lose. But I do know by watching them train if they're going to go to war, if they're going to scrap. And he's going to go to war 100%.
I would assume at 65 kilograms, Ryan Sokol is ready to go to war as well. What do you think about him?
He's got all the skills, man. He's got strong attacks. He's got strong counter offense. His gut wrench is good. He's had a great training camp. If he competes like he did in Akron, I think he stands a great chance to bring home medal. Whether it's a gold, silver, bronze, it's all up to him, but he should be in the hunt. I think all of our guys, for them really to accomplish their goals, we have to do a few different things. We have to make sure that our parterre defense is on point, can't be turned. We can't get beat with our own technique. and we have to stay on our offense, and we have to stay aggressive from the first second to the last second. And he has had a great training camp this last cadet training camp, and so really excited to watch him wrestle and watch him compete. Still one of our young cadets right now, but I really like what I'm seeing out of him, and I expect him to really perform well.
Another returning world medalist, 71 kilograms, Alex Facundo.
Special man, special kid, special personality, special young man. Just smiles, laughs all the time. You know, works his tail off. He likes to grind. You know, he trained three times a day if I let him. But he's got some skills. His skill set is off the chart. His movement, he reminds me. You know, and I'm not. You know, I don't say things too lightly when it comes to, you know, like Satievs and, you know, Sandersons and, you know, just guys that you look at and like, oh, he's special, you know. And I think we have a few of those guys, but I look at him as one of those guys that's, he's special, man. I think he brings some gifts and some talents to the mat that you don't see too often. And I think he's going to be great at the next level. And I think he'll do some special things as a senior level athlete as well. Really, really looking forward to watching him pursue this championship after taking bronze last year.
80 kilograms, Clayton Ulrey.
I don't know if there's anybody tougher. I mean, I watch him every single day in the room, and his energy and his effort is always great. You know, it's his first world team. He hasn't wrestled freestyle that long. It's his first time overseas. So everything is new to him. And I don't know if he knows what he's quite capable of. But like I said, every single day he goes to war. And so I know one thing, he's going to go out there and he's going to scrap. He's going to give 100% effort to do very, very well. And he has great shots. He's a little light for the weight class, At the same time, he brings the heat every single time. He's going to attack, you know, maybe 10 to 15 times in a 2-minute period. And as long as we don't get beat with our own technique, I think he's going to do very, very well at the world championship and give us a chance to win. So he's a good kid. He trained out of Pennsylvania RTC. So Slade's had a chance to have his hands on him quite a bit. And so that's helped in his development and us helping him get to where he needs to get to this world championship as well.
92 kilograms, Kyle Haas.
Like him a lot. He's got the skill set. Again, he's a little light for that weight class. The last 2 years we've had, you know, I don't think our international weights quite match up with our folk style weights that we have in the States. And so he's a little light for 92 kilos, but his skill set's strong, great attacks, great counters. He's a gifted athlete, gifted young man. He's the brother of Tyler Caldwell. Tyler's going to come over and assist us in the corner, cornering him at the world championship. Again, he's another kid that's never been overseas, hasn't been wrestling freestyle that long. But he has the talent and ability to compete for a world title, to compete for a medal. I think as long as we can control the tie up and not get out tactics with the hand fight and the shot clock and push out type stuff, I think we're going to be in good shape with Kyle.
We'll end with the big boy, 110 kilograms, Hunter Katka.
The big cat. That's what we call him. We call him the big cat. That's because he wrestles hard and he's agile and he's in great shape. So, kid that loves to lift weights. I mean, I think he lifts weights 4 or 5 times a week. Another kid that came out of the Pennsylvania RTC, so that another kid that Brandon Slay has his hands on. And so with Brandon being on staff, it gives me a little more insight to him. I think he's going to be in the hunt to do very, very well at the world championship. I think for the first time, I think some of these other countries are going to look at us like we might be cheating. Like this guy ain't 16 because he looks like a full grown man physically and mature wise. And he's got some gifts to the table. And he has great attack. As long as we don't get beat with our own technique, taking shots that aren't there and kind of giving up spin around, or we get beat in parterre or lose the hand fight, I think he's going to be right there to win. And so our expectations are high for him. And I think he's going to represent USA really, really well.
All right. We concluded all the cadets. Now will you whet our appetite with some senior level talk here? And Jaden Cox, are you finally going to admit he got it done? He's a world champion. Is he now better than Melvin Douglas?
He's pretty good, dude. he's, he's, he's pretty good, man. And you know what? He can get better. He can even get better. I think Turkey was just a flash of what's to come. He understands the game. He knows what it takes to beat anybody in the world. He knows what he has to do from a tactic, technique, mentality. And he doesn't move right. He moves different. You know, Melvin was special. Melvin moved a certain way. I mean, if him and Melvin wrestled, it would be tight. But with his title and with what I expect him to do this year, I might have to push him past Melvin pretty soon.
So the last time you came on before the World Championships last year, and we talked about his weight class, is he going down to 86 kilos still for the Olympic trials?
I thought he was. But I don't know for sure. And what we've decided to do is we shelved all that communication until after this world championship. His goal is to be world champion again to repeat. So a total focus is there. But I tell you, he was 4 pounds under at the world team trials. Now so he wasn't his lightest bow, but he was 4 pounds under at the world team trials. That gives you an indication of where he's at from a weight standpoint. It would indicate that he's closer to 86 kilos than 97 kilos. One of the reasons he's moved out to Colorado Springs is to take advantage of the resources, meaning our nutritionist, one of the resources, our nutritionist, and they have him on a plan that had his descent going to 86 for the Olympic Games. But right now, he's big and strong. I think he just doesn't want to make that decision quite yet. But I know after the World Championships, they'll make it pretty quick, because whether it's moving up or going down, we'll have to do a couple things differently for both weight classes. So I'm not in a position to say that that's what he's going to do, because he hasn't told me that that's what he's going to do, whether he's going to go 97 or 86. And I'm not trying to get it out of him right now. I'm trying to keep him focused on winning this World Championship.
We mentioned that you are going into the LSU Hall of Fame, and during your time at LSU and even at Iowa State, you wrestled a lot of tough Hawkeyes, Jimmy Zaleski, Royce Alger, of course, I think Marty Kistler too. Who was the toughest Hawkeye you ever wrestled?
Well, Royce was just the toughest. I mean, just like a tough guy, like just a guy that I had to figure out, didn't figure him out until I actually got out of college and learned how to hand fight. So he was the toughest, because I think he's accomplished more with less skill than some other wrestlers. So I really think he's probably the toughest guy that wrestled from Iowa. Jimmy Zaleski, I think, is the most skilled, probably the best wrestler I wrestled out of all of those guys, just because he had solid technique. He could ride. He was a 3-time NCAA champion. I wrestled him as a true freshman and had some pretty good goals with him. So I think from a technical standpoint, credential standpoint, I think he's probably, you know, right there. But as far as the toughest guy, you know, Royce was definitely the toughest guy, because I think he accomplished a lot with the tools that he was bringing to the table.
We're excited about this.
That's kind of a compliment, though. That's kind of a compliment for me, for Royce, right?
I'd say so. Yeah, I mean, I
think that's a compliment, right?
I think you said it was the most heated rivalry that you could ever imagine being a part of, which I think is great, because I think of you and Royce, I think of Carr and Monday, and there's been a few other ones, but that's right up there with the most intense rivalry ever in U.S. history.
Well, I'm glad to hear you say that, because I just get tired of when guys are like, this is the greatest whatever, whatever of all time. And I'm thinking, I've seen a lot of wrestling, and I don't know if you can put that one as the greatest. You know, and that goes for several things that actually pop off on more social media than anything else. So I appreciate that.
But I think there's a tendency, and Andy can chime in, but I think people want to just go with the recency theory, that everyone just thinks that just because it happened last year or this year that it's the most heated ever. But you got to go back, man. There's some great rivalries that a lot of people don't talk about. And then, hey, Schultz and Monday. I mean, my gosh.
Schultz. Yes. Yeah, yeah. No, you hit it on the nail on the head. I mean, I used to watch Kenny Monday and Nate Carr wrestle. And I think that's, for me, that's the greatest rivalry, because you look at their credentials that they eventually acquired. You look at the NCAA championships And you look at how it went back and forth. You know, Kenny Monday would pin him in the Big 12 finals or beat him in the dual meet, and then Nate would get him in the NCAA tournament. And you think about how often they wrestled and how it did go back and forth and how it carried over even to the Olympic level for me. And then it was a straight war. It wasn't a wrestling match. I mean, they come off with black eyes and Nate with a scratch Kenny. I mean, so for me, that's the one. But again, that's the one that I witnessed as a wrestler in that era. And now I've witnessed some of these other ones as a coach, and you know, and so still I think that's the biggest, best rivalry I've ever experienced.
But let's admit it, man, 17 times between you and Royce, not a lot of people are getting that many matches against one guy.
No, man, we banged it out. It took me a while to close the gap on him from a win-loss deal. But the last time we wrestled, I teched him. So that's got to count for two or three matches, right?
I mean, if you want to count it that way, we can only count it as one. That's all we can do. That's all we can do.
I got it.
Yeah.
I feel you.
We're excited about this world championship team. Thanks for breaking it down for us. And we'll see you over in Bulgaria.
All right. Sounds good. Look forward to seeing you guys.
All right. That was Kevin Jackson. He is a 3-time world and Olympic champion. He's going to be part of the Cadet World Championship team. And always fun to talk to KJ. He's said on one of our other interviews, he's an emotional guy. And you just get that. He's got great energy. What a great way to close this out, Andy.
Yeah. It's a lot of great stuff in there. Looking forward to watching these young guys compete over there next week. It's going to be a lot of fun. You're going to be over there, Kyle.
I will. And excited about it. And excited about the level of competition. And I think that you even saw that being at the senior world team training camp, that there's some cadets going with these guys and they're good. They're as good as what Kevin say, a lot of the collegiate guys, they have better technique than a lot of the collegiate guys. And it'd be fun to just see how they do against some collegiate competition. They're right up there. They're good.
No doubt.
We got to close this out. It's been fun talking Cadet World Championships. Make sure you watch it all live on Track Wrestling. A variety of ways you can do that. You can do it the pay-per-view route or get a Gold Plus membership, which I would highly recommend. Access to numerous, numerous videos through the Track Wrestling portal. For Andy Hamilton, I'm Kyle Klingman. You have been listening to On the Mat.
Is part of the Matt Talk Podcast Network. For more wrestling podcasts, head over to matttalkonline.com.